Hey, this is Joe Cornish. I'm the writer and director of Attack the Block. Welcome to the Attack the Block commentary. Thanks for switching it on and listening to this. I'm joined here by the cast of Attack the Block. If you could introduce yourself, yeah. Simon.
Simon, Howard, Biggs. I play Biggs.
My name is John Boyega. I play Moses.
It's Alex Esmail. I play Perth.
Leon Jones and I play Jerome.
Franz Drame playing Dennis.
So let's start with DVD commentaries just in general. Do you guys listen to DVD commentaries at all? Have you ever listened to a DVD commentary? Franz?
Yeah. I think DVD commentaries are all right.
What have you listened to in the past?
Oh, Lord of the Rings DVD commentary.
Yeah?
I've listened to that about 8 times.
Yeah, I've listened to that.
Leon Jones, what DVD commentaries do you like?
I can't remember the one I listened to, though.
Great, good answer. Yeah. Alex Esmail.
I'll tell you what, I actually haven't listened to any.
Honesty, best policy. Simon.
Lord of the Rings, I think the third movie I listened to.
Third one, John Boyega.
Tim Burton's A Planet of the Apes.
Good one. So, have we got opinions about DVD commentary tracks? Because here we are doing our own one, and I've got opinions. Like, I don't like it when the cast talk about the weather on the day.
Sorry, I'm going to have to mention the weather on some of this.
I don't like it when they spend all the time talking about how amazing everybody is and how brilliant everybody is.
Yeah.
Everybody was amazing.
So what you want is real. You want something.
Yeah, I don't like it when there are long pauses. Mm-hmm. Mm. I don't like it when people just sort of go stuff like, oh, look at those traffic lights. Isn't that London Underground sign nice? So we're going to try and make this a really good commentary.
Yeah.
So here we go.
Look at this knee.
Oh, who's that hottie?
Look, we're already doing all the things we said we wouldn't.
Oh, my bad.
So the first thing I want to ask you is where you, and we'll go around you one by one, where you were when you first heard about this film, what the first thing you heard about Attack the Block was. Simon Howard.
I was in college and my drama teacher Stuart was like, there's a new film.
Stuart,
he was like, there's a new film and it's gonna come out and there's auditions.
How old were you, Simon, at this point?
I was now 17. I was 16, I think.
You're
I was
17
turning
now.
17. No, I'm 18 now.
Oh, you're 18 now,
yeah.
So you were turning 17 when
yeah,
you
I was
first
turning
heard
17.
About the film.
And then he said that there's auditions on Friday and it was like Wednesday. So I got ready, came in on Friday.
John Boyega.
Online audition site.
Really?
Yep. And I saw a bunch of like proper chavs and it said
what do you mean by that?
Like there was an imagery of like some chavs with Lonsdale.
I saw that thing.
Lonsdale hoodies.
So that's an interesting thing we should talk about, like the imagery people use to describe the film and stuff. Especially that word chavs. People use a lot.
Which is annoying.
Which isn't really accurate when it comes to the people in the film. But let's keep on going asking you like how old were you, John, when we first
17.
17 when you first heard about the film. Alex?
I'd just turned 16, actually.
Jeez.
My birthday had been, like, 2 months before. And I was at college doing drama. And on the day, we had, like, a double lesson. 2 hours of drama. And after the first hour, the teacher was like, OK, there's a woman coming in from this company and she wants to audition you for this. And I was just like, I ain't going to get it. I'll take the piss and have a laugh. And I got an audition after that. So
good
I started
work.
Taking it seriously.
Leon Jones?
I was at a drama workshop with Mayhem Group, and then one of the casting directors came, I think Lucy, and she was like holding like improvisation games. Like it was an audition.
This is Lucy Pardee.
Yeah, Lucy Pardee.
Yeah, Lucy did the Pardee. Casting on the film with Nina Gold.
Lucy Pardee. Yep. Pardee. Oh, no.
And like she was, we were doing this improvisation game, but at the time we didn't know it was an audition. But then she took our details down. And then she was like, "And I'll give you a call." And then after that, I got a call, and then we had to go for more auditions after that.
Franz Drame.
Yeah, my agent gave me a call one day, just like, "Hey, Franz, is this really interesting new project?"
Does she talk like that?
Yeah, no, she picks him more like, "Hey, Franz, is this really interesting?" She kind of talks like that, but no, she's like, "Yeah, there's this interesting project, and it's about aliens and a council estate in South London." So I was kind of like, "Hmm."
And okay. you were how old?
I was 16 at the time.
How old were you, Leon?
I was 16 as well at the time.
So you were all about 16, 17?
Yeah.
And we're now what? We're now
18.
It's now pretty much a year after later. We shot the film, isn't it?
Yeah.
This time last year. mm-hmm. in 2010 we yeah. were shooting. Mm. Yeah. So here's my next question. My next question is, what experience had you had with acting, and especially acting in front of cameras, when you auditioned for this film, Simon?
I didn't really have film experience at all before, because I was more doing theatre work. Like, I was with London Youth Committee and other theatre groups outside my school.
So you've never done anything on camera before?
No, not filming. Only, like, when I'm doing a monologue at a theatre, like, someone would film it, not actual film.
So this is your first sort of on-screen role, like, yeah. whether it's TV or film?
Yeah.
For Simon Howard. John Boyega?
First on-screen role.
What had you been doing before we found you?
I was at the Tricycle doing a play, part of the non-black or white season at the track, which you came to see.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I came to see John Boyega in a production called... What was the play
Category
called?
Category B.
Category B, yeah, yeah. about life mm-hmm. in prisons. And you had a small part, John, didn't you? You were on stage for about 10 minutes.
10 minutes. Went backstage. Kebab, same thing next day.
Really? Yeah. And before you'd done that play, how much training had you had?
Quite a lot of training, but
since you were a little kid.
Yeah, you say that, but it's youth group. Then from youth group to professional training, and then from there to this. But
yeah.
It's all still a new experience.
Yeah, Alex.
I had absolutely no training whatsoever. I mean, I did, you know. Drama college and school and stuff, but I'd never acted in theatre or on screen at all.
And Leon Jones?
Yeah, same as my first job as well. I haven't had any on screen before.
Any training? Any theatre groups, lessons and stuff?
No, just studying drama really at school and that. College. That was about it.
And Franz?
Yeah, I'd had quite a bit actually of TV and a tiny bit of film as well.
In fact, out of everybody here, friends, you probably had the most on
camera
work.
Yeah, I've had quite a bit. I mean, my job before this was on Hereafter with Clint Eastwood and stuff. It was quite amazing to do Disney stuff, BBC stuff, all the kind of usual kind of run of the mill actory stuff like.
So let's talk about what's going on screen at the moment. Obviously, the gang in the film have just been attacked by the little alien, and they've just beaten it up in the playground hut. Let's talk about the beginning of the film and the fact that we meet this gang as kind of scary, almost stereotyped muggers. What did you think about the script when you read it in terms of the way it presents young people from London and gangs? When you read the script, were any of you like put off by this opening scene? Did you think this was going to be another sort of stereotyped film?
No, I weren't put off, because the stereotype films is usually like kids versus kids. You're in that area, I'm in this area, let's have a war. But I knew it wasn't really kind of like that, because sci-fi is involved, like aliens are coming to South London, so.
So it immediately says that it's not about the gang thing, kind of thing.
Yeah, like, but yeah, it does say that, because it's not like we're not fighting other gangs, we're not pulling guns out on other gangs, nothing like that. So.
What's your feeling about the way that people of your age are portrayed in films and television generally?
Stereotypes, isn't it?
What sort of
same
thing?
Same old negative stuff. Do you know what I mean? Mm. This world was different for me. I did start off thinking it was very stereotypical, to be honest. But what done it for me was the journey, was the fact that during the film, the characters got stripped of all this kind of I don't care attitude, and then you come to realise that they're just cool kids. They're just kids, you know? And I think, you know, young kids are just stereotyped. There are some kids who are doing good, but who are just in places like this and just are the product of their communities. Do you know what I mean?
And do you find yourselves, like Franz, as a young actor, do you find yourselves auditioning and being asked to do very similar things a lot?
I mean, in UK at the moment, especially for young black actors as well, there's not too many diverse roles out there at the moment. I mean, it's always drug dealer this, kind of gang this, shoot this, stab that. But I don't know, this is different, because it's not it's about the gang and that. It's more than that, and it kind of shows the kind of reality of this whole kind of area, even though it's got this whole alien twist to it, which I liked.
So, what are your memories of filming this section? I mean, this was the we shot this film pretty much chronologically, so we went through the story in story order. And we started, we were shooting here around the Haygate in South London, and we shot around Myatt's Fields in Brixton. And it was freezing cold, says he, having said we weren't going to talk about the weather. It was like sub-zero.
Didn't Alex nearly like...
Get hyperboiled,
Alex. Yeah. He nearly died.
He degrees away from hypothermia in the first week. Not good.
So talk a bit about what this was like, because this would have been in at the deep end for you guys, your first feature film. How did it feel when you came on the set for the first day and saw the scale of the production? Can you can you describe that at all, Leon, for instance?
Yeah, when the first time we saw it, like, it was a shock, kind of, because like, this is, as you said, this is my first time seeing it as well. Like, the, like, all the equipment, everyone around you, the crew.
How many people are around you? I mean, can you describe the scene when you first walked
onto
the set?
You walk on and there's literally people everywhere just walking around. Like, everyone's doing their job, really.
Yeah. Everyone's got their own job to do.
And how did you feel? Were you nervous or intimidated or confident? Or how did you feel?
I wasn't nervous at first. I would say I was confident because, like, I was looking forward to doing it. Like... It felt good. I got used to it after, and then it felt natural.
Simon, how did you feel? Because this would have been your first time walking onto any kind of film or television set.
Yeah, I was nervous at first, you know, because it's like, I wasn't nervous with, like, the lights and everything, because I'm used to that from theatre and everything, but what made me nervous is that I wasn't actually really used to an actual film set. Like, I didn't really know what was really going on around me, too tough. Mm. But, like, 1 week, 2 weeks into it, you start knowing everyone's role, then that's about it.
And did the rehearsal help? Because, John, we had a little bit of rehearsal, didn't we, before we actually started filming.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell people about that?
Yeah, it was fun. Got a chance to kind of, like, tweak the script. Got a chance to get into our characters and, like... do improvisation,
bond.
put the scenes...
Bonding was important, right? Because we had to make you look like friends and a gang who'd known each other.
Yeah, we had to look like we'd known each other for years and stuff. So I think that whole rehearsal period and that just made us kind of actually get to know each other properly, because, I mean, we're spending, like, the whole day together. Mm. Like, so...
Yeah. And even sometimes after rehearsals as well, after some of us stick together.
Yeah.
And it was pretty intense work, wasn't it? Like, we were shooting 6 day weeks, all night, in the freezing cold. was there any point at which you thought, you know, fuck this? This isn't as fun as I thought it could be. Alex, was there any point like you got really super cold? and
hella cold, man.
Hella cold, dude.
There wasn't one point where in my mind I wanted to leave. Not once.
Eskimo.
Anybody else? Did anybody else have second thoughts? Think this is too much like hard work?
Nah, man. But there was only, I think there was only one scene where I was like, here, forget this. I'm going to go home in a minute. That was when I was like...
What scene was that, Franz?
There was a scene where, like, there was, like, blood shooting up into my eyes and my nose and my mouth. My neck was in some crooked position. I was just like, Do you know what? Yeah.
When was this very scene?
Yeah, this scene was sleep. Remember, we were
like
doing
the set, like the dust.
It made you really and depressed.
So let's talk about here. You appear to be smoking jazz cigarettes, which is very dangerous and irresponsible. But what's actually being smoked here?
Oh, weed.
Oh, yeah, God.
Oh, marijuana.
It was just some cheese.
Let's let Alex smoke a lot of it.
I was one of the first people that tasted it, and Franz tasted it straight after. It was this herbal... I don't even know how to describe it as what it was.
Honey roast.
It was like... honey roast... crap.
And it's like you tasted like Holland fish Barracks.
It was terrible.
I thought it was alright.
We first tasted it on rehearsals, Franz.
Oh, man.
Oh, I nearly puked. He nearly puked.
So, Tim nearly puked. So it's nasty herbal tobacco stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But you kind of get used to it after, you know, after a while.
And now only it's worth pointing out here that only particular members of the gang are actually indulging in this stuff. Yeah. So Moses is not indulging in this stuff. Nah, who else isn't? Your character Jerome isn't indulging in it.
And we're making bigs.
Yeah, we kind
of. Yeah,
I'm so you're forcing me to try it.
No,
kind of smoking.
Whereas Pesticles, as we like to call him, he is the linchpin of the naughty smoking activity. Now let's talk about Nick Frost. So Nick Frost. What was it like meeting him and working with him? Let's ask John Boyega.
It was cool. It was brilliant.
Did you know his work before you did this?
Yeah, watched Shaun of the Dead, watched Hot Fuzz. And to see him right in front of me, eating biscuits and filming a scene, I was just like, oh my gosh. But then I just got down, do the work.
Yeah.
He's a cool guy. We love Nick.
Yeah.
Nick loves us.
Yeah. He can be quite sort of distracting and cheeky on set.
Yes. Acting.
Hang on a second. What are you saying there, John? What did he used to do?
Before when the cameras were rolling, before we started seeing, he would just shout out something like acting or Moses, don't bum me or something like that. And it was just like everyone just started cracking up. I don't know why he does it, but you know, it must help him in some way.
One that was good is we were standing there just before this scene in the weed room when we were all outside, and me and him are standing there talking. I can't remember what it was amazingly about, but we came up with the idea about Ron's mum, that she was too fat to leave her bed, she was bald. One, instead of having, you know, a normal set of tits, she had one big tit in the middle of her chest. And she'd asked Nick's character Ron to rub her feet.
I can imagine this might have got quite obscene. Let's not go there for the sake of
it. It was just hilarious. You know, I think everybody connected with them at a different point.
Now let's talk about obviously there's the brilliant Jermaine Hunter here playing hi-hats, but just to briefly talk about Salom there, who is another guy I think who'd had not a lot of acting experience before he did this part, and he's brilliant as Tonks, don't you think, Salom?
Salom is just
hilarious.
Tell us about Salom, friends.
He's just the most funny, the funniest down to earth.
Yeah, really.
Just
chilled
out. Like a big teddy bear. Yeah. He's just so lovely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So here's another weird thing about shooting in this room was we had all this ultraviolet light, which comes into play later to reveal the alien's pheromone, but it meant we had to protect our eyes all the time, didn't it? And also our skin, because you can get sunburned and it can damage your eyeballs, right?
Some guy said I look like Blade.
How do you mean? That feels like a non sequitur. Oh, in your sunglasses, shades. In your wraparound shades. Yeah. But it was one of the spaces that was quite oppressive to work in because it was so narrow. It was full of all those weed plants. And worst of all, they were fake. And it was boiling hot. full of that weird smoke.
Wasn't that Moff, the documentary voice?
That's Adam Buxton. Yeah. From the Watson Joe Show, which is your favourite radio show, right? I remember you guys all talking a lot about your characters when we weren't shooting and thinking about what their families were like, what their backgrounds were like, what they'd done before this all happened and what they would do after and stuff. Mm. Can we talk about that a bit? Like John, is there stuff that you've figured out about Moses that isn't necessarily in the film and on the screen?
I figured in terms of his status in the end, he was like in the end, he's kind of like, He's big on ends. He's a big boy. Everybody knows him. Everybody respects him, kind of thing. I think obviously with him not living with his parents, he's done a lot of bad stuff in school. At this point, we're probably meeting where he's like kicked out, doesn't really go to school. Like we see Jerome in his school uniform, underneath his hoodie.
Yeah, that's a good observation that Jerome's the only character who's still got his uniform under his hoodie. So there's lots of little clues about the characters there, aren't they? If you want to look, if Biggs you want to look bunking. Closely. How do we know Biggs is bunking?
It's just nerves. He got sucked in by Dennis or Pest or someone.
And John, a lot of what you're saying is sort of spins out of the fact that we see Moses being recruited by Hi-Hats there and given some cocaine and stuff to deal. So that means that he's already reached a certain place in the hierarchy in the block.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a line from Hi-Hats that says, you still shot my food from Ron still. Like, obviously he's done things, he's done stuff.
So that means Moses has been low-level weed dealing in the area.
Yeah. Not really sure about it, though. He's not really sure about it.
So, what are you giggling at, friend?
Just the way that what's it? Jerome just pulls out this massive machete just from nowhere. Like,
so we couldn't figure out where he would hide that machete. Yeah. Do you remember? We had to shoot that really quickly. And I think in the script it was under the mattress
at first, or behind his bed or something like that.
But you know, a lot of this stuff came from real interviews I did with kids and youth groups around South London, and I taught them through the story, and I would ask them how they would defend themselves under these circumstances. And I said, if you needed to defend yourself, what weapon would you get in your house? And really, aliens or no aliens, most people have a little plan in their head for what they would do if there was an intruder in their house. So this isn't really saying this sequence that all kids on estates have weapons. It's saying that all human beings have a little place in their mind where they have an emergency plan.
It's complete human nature, you know. There's always suspicions.
I know if there was an alien that came to my house, I'm throwing my cat first and running.
So obviously here we're doing a thing where we see every member of the gang go into their flats, but we don't go into the flat with Moses to try and create a little bit of mystery of what's behind his door.
Did we ever figure out what he was doing?
because he doesn't bring a weapon back.
Well, this is very true. We tried to figure out why Moses was going into his flat, and there is an answer to that.
Probably cheating.
Think of any John's
It's
not a very, very heroic thing to do.
I think there's a scene where he's on his balcony, just looking out, just saying, "This is my night. Gotta go defend the block." And then he comes out. But obviously, you didn't have the right money to put that scene in the film. So you know.
So here we go back outside, and now obviously the first, the second wave of meteors has come down, and this was another very cold night.
This was a funny night.
Yeah. It was a funny night. Why was it funny?
There were so many mishaps happening, especially when it came to modes of transportation. I nearly broke John's leg with a pen.
Yeah.
Alex dropped off the tiny, tiny bike.
No, the way it happened, man, I was trying to pedal really fast, and my left foot slipped off the pedal, went under the bike, and the whole bike flipped, and I landed on my bike.
I did a wheelie on the ped and dropped. It was crazy.
And this is where we first see a glimpse of the big second wave of aliens. Yeah. And the guy who helped perform the aliens was this guy called Terry Notary. Who can tell us about Terry, Lee?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm Terry. Yeah, basically, that's Terry. He's coming to sit.
Hang on. Describe. Remember, people at home won't have any idea of who this person is. So start basic. Who was Terry?
He was the guy in the alien suit, right?
It's an American guy.
American, yeah. And he done a lot of work. He does all the the animation.
Motion capture.
He done the Hulk in it, and Superman. He done Silver Surfer, Planet Apes. He done a lot of work, actually.
So he was quite a cool guy to have around
definitely.
The place.
He's he's very, he makes the room bright when he comes in. He'll come in and he's like, "Hey guys," and everything just lights up, really. He's a good guy, man.
And did it ever feel scary for real?
The worst thing about Terry, man, is there'll be a scene even when he's on top of Franz or he's chasing me or he's chasing somebody, he'll be standing there psyching himself out, and he's going, "Yeah, Alex, you're my bitch. I'm gonna catch you, you bitch. I'm gonna put you down and rape you." Yeah.
So let's talk about the feds, the 5-0. The police in the block here. What do you think about the way that this film represents the relationship between the young people on the estate and the police?
Quite truthful. They don't like each other.
Yeah.
Clearly.
And is that a true reflection of what it's like out there, do you think?
Yeah.
And why is that situation arose? Why is a situation arose where whole communities don't even trust the police? I mean, is it true to say that in some of these communities, if something bad happens to you...
No, you know, in some communities, when something bad does happen, the whole community goes to the police. Mm-hmm. And there's some communities when something bad happens, even people's mums, dads wouldn't even want to get police involved.
And what's the difference between those things? What's the difference? Why would you in one circumstance go to the police and in another circumstance not?
I think it's more... Some people think, are they actually gonna
do anything
about it, or should I go do something about it myself? Mm. Really?
Because there's a thing you guys brought to the script in the draft that I had before I cast you. The kids were a bit softer on Sam, because obviously Jodie Whittaker's character Sam reports the kids to the police, and we sort of went a bit stronger on the idea that she was a snitch.
Didn't we?
Because talking to you guys, you felt that that would have been a stronger thing from the gang. Mm-hmm.
Talking to the police is a big no-no.
So, so that's suggesting that even, like, by definition, reporting somebody to the police is, like, the worst thing you can do. Is that true?
I would say...
Because there's a contradiction here, isn't there?
Yeah, there is a contradiction.
I think it depends on the severity of what happens.
An element of it is a silly mentality. Another element has, like, a truthful sense to it. But, you know, I don't know, it's opinion. It all goes down to just opinions, what you think of the police and whether you think telling the police will help the situation and all that stuff. But I personally think that we were thinking about the characters when we brought that to the scripts. Like Moses, obviously, he knows what he's been through and he knows why he robbed her. So whatever he does is the truth to him and is right to him because of his situation.
Yeah.
So robbing Sam is like, you know, I had to rob you. I need the money, whatever. But why are you going to tell the police though? don't tell the police. Like, don't tell the police. They don't know what I've been through. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, it's weird.
And so how about this? This is where the sequence becomes a little more fantastical, using fireworks to get out of the
great shot
to get Moses out of the police van there.
It is one of my favourite bits.
Yeah.
Now, Alex Esmail, you actually threw that that firework, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
And you got it under that van in one shot, didn't you?
Actually, it took me 3 tries.
Did it?
On the 3rd try, I got it right under.
Bloody hell.
Okay. On the 1st try, it was too short and it kind of rolled and stopped. On the 2nd try, I hit the van. And on the 3rd try, it rolled under.
Surely there's like a category in Oscars for that.
Were you guys disappointed at all that when you shoot action, you have to break it down into these tiny little pieces? Did you know that before we went into this?
I didn't actually know that, you know.
Yeah.
I thought it's actually the full-on everything.
Yeah. But
it's not. Really,
so you thought that we'd stage the whole sequence and then sort of shoot it with lots of cameras?
Yeah, or like, you know, if it's like a showdown, like a face down, I thought it would actually be full-on.
Has making this film made you watch movies in a different way?
Yeah, definitely.
I watch a film that I've watched before, like before I did the film, and I just realised like, oh, there's a cameraman right there, there's people behind him just walking about, and like, you look at it so different.
Hang on, what
is it about horror films, sorry?
Like, you just know, like, before I always knew it was fake, but like, you always got that feeling that, right, that looked real that time. But then it's like, it's up to the point where you just know, like, what's he doing, like? His head ain't falling off, like, what's he doing?
Stunt doubles as well.
Does it give you more respect for actors and directors? Because as somebody who's directed their first film, before I directed a film, I used to be quite casual about being opinionated and slagging things off and bitching about stuff. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But now that I've made a film, I've got a lot kind of more respect, and I'm going to do that less because now I know how hard work it is. I mean, it is hard work, wouldn't you say? It's like nature's against you.
Definitely.
It's like the world doesn't want you to go in a
time, especially as well.
What is it? It's time. It's like feeling tired.
Yeah. The weather.
The weather. It's like little things being really annoying.
All gathering up, and then it's just a big problem.
Yeah.
What I really have respect for is actors in films where you know, something's completely CGI, so they're acting with nothing.
Mm.
I think, you know, that must be quite hard. Mm-hmm. You know, I have real respect for those people. Since I've done this, I realise how hard it must be.
To act to an empty space.
Yeah, to just like a green screen or something, it must be extremely hard.
Because we were lucky to have the actual creatures in front of us, weren't we? Do you think that made a difference?
Yeah, because they're actually scary. Like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially with people inside, they're actually like, these big black things in front of your face, and it's quite... It does bring a scare factor to it.
Yeah, it does.
You're standing in front of it, it's like, whoa.
And it's like you are running from something.
You are running because
if you stop, you are getting hit or something. Yeah. Yeah. You might as well just run.
Were there moments in filming where you... I mean, presumably you're all really good actors, so maybe that you were like this all the time, but were there moments when you felt you were totally in the film? When you completely forgot about the crew around you?
Yeah.
A lot of times.
There was one day, I think it was... In I think the scene before, when me and John, we went into character, and literally we literally like disappeared for about 10 minutes and just like was wandering like around the Hague.
Oh, yeah. So this was off camera.
Yeah, this was off camera, and we were just wandering around, like, as Moses and Dennis just talking to each other, and we kind of got in trouble for that. But we kind of like there were certain points where we'd be like saying something and be like, hold on, that's like a Dennis thing to say. That's a Pez thing to say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how about Jodie Whittaker's character, Sam, here? But we were talking about this a little bit earlier. But do you think the film portrays a realistic progression of their relationship? Do you think this gang in reality would warm to her?
I think it depends really, but knowing on the circumstances, I think there's not much.
I think you have to be very careful not to be too political with this film, because at the end of the day, the sci-fi does shine through throughout a lot of it. Do you know what I mean?
So it becomes kind of exaggerated and larger than life.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Franz and John, you having an interesting conversation about that. We gave you little flip cams, didn't we, to shoot yourselves, and one afternoon you left it on. And I think you were aware that it was on, but you had a conversation about Sam and about Dennis, out of all these characters, really not liking her.
Yeah.
He's the one that will not forgive her for snitching.
That's the only thing that I think I kind of methoded. One thing I tried not to really talk to Jodie too much. I feel a bit bad now. But, I tried not to really chat to her too friendly kind of thing, just so that I wouldn't, when I was in a scene with her, it would be clear that I really didn't actually like her at all. So I think it's because Dennis is kind of, he's really bad. He's into that whole badness. He likes it. I don't think, whereas some of the other characters, I mean, Moses does it because this is kind of what he has to do just to like...
To survive.
Whereas Dennis is kind of doing it because this is fun. Like,
he thinks he's a bad boy.
Yeah,
he's being brought up.
That's what I like about it. Yeah. That's what I love about it. It shows different reason.
Yeah.
Biggs is there because he's a small little kid and just under peer pressure.
There,
he
so
wants
I'm
the
there.
Fun. Moses is there because of his circumstance. Jerome doesn't even want to be there.
Let's talk about how does Jerome feel about the whole thing?
He doesn't want to be in these situations. Like he knows like what they're doing is wrong. He knows that there's a career for him in the future. Like,
what?
Path.
Why is Jerome there in the mud
like,
in the first
honestly,
place?
Because like he grew up with these guys. Like these guys were around. This is where he lives as well.
Yeah.
And he grew up with these guys. Like they went to school with him. Some of them went to school with him as well. And like they're his boys. Like once you have them boys, like you will go with them no matter what, because that's like their family basically.
Because he's sort of he's doing his job in the mugging, but you can see that Jerome's a little more nervous and he's hanging at the back and he just wants to leave.
He's not really, I wouldn't say like a fighter, he's more like strategic and like a tactician. Like he would rather work stuff out than go and get his hands dirty, whereas like Dennis.
And how does he feel about Sam, do you think?
I don't think he really minds, you know, because like...
How do you mean doesn't mind?
Because like he doesn't mind her there, because... Like it's not really bothering him that he's there. I mean, she's there, sorry. But he doesn't really mind. He doesn't really care, to be honest.
He quite likes her.
Yeah, I think he finds it a bit interesting as well.
And what about Pesticles? How does Pesticles feel about Sam?
I don't really think he cares that much because, you know, through part of the film, well, at this point he doesn't really care.
He's too baked.
Yeah, he's too high. But I think once he gets bitten and stuff, you know, he wants her to be there just for his own safety. Like, he doesn't care what happens to her, he just wants her to help him.
So here comes our biggest action sequence, I suppose, the walkway chase.
Oh, this was fun.
This was serious.
It's interesting how when you work on a film, because these things take so long to do, different parts of the film have different names, don't they? So we always refer to this as the walkway chase, like we referred to Moses' big run at the end as the hero run.
Yeah, we can't talk about that now. That's
talk about
epic,
that, yes.
Epicness.
So let's talk about filming this. I mean, we spent about a week or 10 days just on this sequence alone, right?
I think it came out great.
And it was, thank you, Alex. And it was broken down. It was broken down into loads of little chunks, wasn't it? So, do we want to tell people which of these things are stuntmen and which aren't, or should we leave it a mystery?
We'll let people have a guess.
Yeah, so, Simon, what was it like performing this jump?
I hurt my back a bit.
Yeah. How many times did you do it?
One take, man.
One take. Very good. And what was it like, John, driving down these stairs on that motocross bike?
Uncomfortable. My balls weren't happy.
Now, can we?
That was a stunt double.
Really
that won't be.
Now, Franz, are there moments when you got frustrated that your character's a bit of a klutz? Like, he's trying to be super cool, but he keeps falling over.
I found it quite funny, because he's trying so hard. He's trying so hard, isn't he? Wow.
And here's a good moment with Pesticles.
Ouch.
That was fun.
Yeah, and that spark wasn't even meant to happen. That just happened, like, just naturally.
Was that D-Neg?
Nah, it just happened.
Seriously,
I tell you who that was? That was Asa from Technicolor, who graded the film. He very kindly spent an extra couple of hours painstakingly animating some little sparks
to
come out of that.
You're not supposed to tell people
at home, yeah. giving them one little morsel of truth amongst the lies. So, Simon, this is when your character ends up jumping in the bin. So that had quite a lot of repercussions, didn't it? It meant that you were separated from the rest of the cast.
Yeah.
Talk about that for a bit. Were you happy about that or were you upset about that? Because you'd formed quite a tight-knit friendship at this point.
Yeah,
we
me
were about
and
four
Julie
or five that. Weeks into the shoot.
Yeah.
And then suddenly into the bin you go and you're separated from everybody else.
I think when you look at it, like, a couple people died, so it's really... I'm grateful that I was in the bin.
But, no, that's real.
But, you know, like, a man gotta do what a man gotta do. I was getting chased by aliens.
Plus, Biggs becomes a very useful kind of communication centre down there in the
bin,
doesn't he? Like, Biggs, the only guy who's got any credit in that
it's like
bin.
It's BT.
But I reckon he don't know a lot of stuff, though, man. He's missed so much.
He's like, ignorant of a lot of what's happened.
Yeah, man.
So now we go into the interiors, and basically the whole first third of the film is all exterior. Almost the first half of it is all exterior. And that was our first 5 weeks of shooting. And then we went into the studio in Three Mills and shot in these brilliant corridor sets that were built by Marcus Rowland. And I don't know about you, but weirdly, I preferred working on location at night than I did the studio.
Yeah.
It felt like playtime at night.
Yeah.
And when we got into
real.
The studio, it felt like a work, like 9 to 5.
Haygate was the best when we was on the actual. That was the best time.
Best time.
But I did enjoy the studio stuff though.
It's warmer,
isn't it? It was warmer. It was more comfortable. It was easier to get food, and it was a kind of tiny bit more relaxed. But we still had an enormous amount to do, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Were you surprised at how fast you have to do stuff? As a director, I was surprised at how little time you have to do things. When I watch films, I always think that they've had ages to think about everything. But often you just have to get the shot done really, really fast.
Sometimes you do.
I think it's longer than TV. TV, you like crack out loads of pages like in a day, whereas you can be working on maybe how long did we film this?
This scene went on for a while.
I think was on this scene here was over a day.
These scenes are complicated because there's so many people in the room.
Yeah. Mm.
And then every different eye line has to be represented by a different camera position. Yeah. So what took a lot of time here was just getting all the angles we needed. But then the challenge for you guys was to keep the energy up and the enthusiasm up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which was sometimes quite hard when you were tired and stuff like that.
I think for me it was like, what are we talking for? Like, do you know what I mean? It's a film about aliens. So much talking, like, because you know what's to come. You know that there's going to be a chase. You know that there's going to be this and that. So you're just like, okay, can we just like get this done?
It's not a talky film, though, is it? When I worked on the script before I'd even met you guys, the note I would get a lot was, oh, it should stop more. There should be more scenes where people stop and talk about things.
Mm.
But I didn't want that. I just wanted to keep it pushing forward.
Should have been a silent film.
You know, that one made it very cinematic.
Yeah,
so we're back here with Brewis and Ron. Let's talk about Brewis's character. Do you guys know anybody like Brewis in the real world? Pesticles, go on, me.
Yeah,
Joe Cornish.
You, Joe.
Do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've said it yourself on many occasions.
Bit stupid.
That you are quite like Brewis.
I used to be. He's certainly based on me when I was in my 20s, and I used to go and score jazz herbs in various tower blocks in Wandsworth. I did, but I'd find myself in these weird situations where the jazz specialist would go off to, you know, get some stuff from somewhere else, and I'd be sitting alone in his flat. And my mind used to, like, fantasise about what might happen. You know, if a rival dealer came round, or the police smashed in the door and raided the flat. So that was where all this comes from, really. What do you think about the character of Brewis?
He's hilarious.
Oh, waste man.
Great character.
Do you think there are people like this out there?
Yeah, definitely.
Of course.
Definitely.
He's got a good look to him as well. Like.
He has, hasn't he? We should talk about costume a bit, because Luke came up with that costume himself. He says, look, I want to put this together myself. And
I really
amazing.
And I thought, when he came up with it, I thought, this is weird. He looks like a sort of funky farmer.
Yeah. But it works.
And then as I walk the streets of London, even now, you see people dressed exactly like
that. That's the style, like the boots and all that.
I know exactly a man. Exactly a man.
You really got it spot on. Yeah, and you guys help with your costumes as well. Can we talk about that a bit? The costume designer was a very brilliant lady called Rosa Diaz. And she's an absolute genius, and she brought so much brightness and poppiness and colourfulness.
She's fabulous.
She's really amazing. But with enormous respect to her, and just like me and everybody, all of the other kind of older people on the crew, we didn't really know the symbolism and the significance of various colours. Right? And I guess people of my generation remember this kind of thing from LA gangs in the 90s.
I've seen you around there before, you know. You lived there long.
Couple of months.
Nice place you
got. So what mistakes do you think we nearly made with the costumes?
Brim of the hats.
The brim of the hats?
Yeah.
So we bought you some hat brims that were kind of bent. Like
duck
a duck
hats.
Beak.
Yeah.
And that's bad, is it?
Yeah.
It's not. Doesn't have the South London energy to it. Doesn't have the South London swag.
So you've got to have your hat brim completely straight.
Straight.
Like fitted
era hats.
Fitted caps. Fitted.
Yeah.
And what about shoes?
Oh God.
Do you know what? I don't know. The shoes. I think the shoes you can get away with a lot with the shoes, to be honest.
Mm.
But I think what was a big one was the jeans and stuff, like the trousers. Because I remember one of the first initial costumes I had was like really tight, like suffocating, like skinny jeans. And that's a kind of big no-no, like.
So you wouldn't be seen dead wearing skin-tight jeans?
No.
And what about this thing where some of these characters have multiple pairs of trousers on? Can you explain what the deal with that is?
Keep the weed.
Yeah, keep your weed, your
when your hands
knives
are cold.
And stuff.
And cold, trust me.
On the inside, so it's harder to find.
If you've got to run away from police, quickly dash.
Right, so the idea is that if you get patted down, But does that really work? Like, you could presumably feel a weapon or a little bit of weed through a second pair of trousers?
From 1999 to 2000, it just went dead. It don't work.
Oh, that... So now it's just like a... Really?
It's just like a ding thing now.
And it's to bash it low as well.
Yeah, just low, but isn't it?
If you want to, like, rock it low without, like...
Your boxers being...
Your ass cheeks coming out.
Okay. But what about... Can't you just have your boxer shorts on?
What the hell? Yeah.
No, but then you'll be seeing backs and legs.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, it depends how low you want it, because like, there's certain people that like to put it very low.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm. And if you're just wearing your boxers, then you're going to see skin, and that's not attractive.
What about the bandanas?
Hide your face.
But the bandanas, different territories around London have different coloured bandanas, right?
I think my bandana was the only one that was kind of territory-based. Just because I think the black bandana represents South London, I think. I think it does. I think there's different areas in Brixton, different areas in Peckham, all around that have that kind of colour. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, we wanted to be careful that we weren't pretending to be something that we weren't,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
That we weren't trying to say that we were any particular. We were trying to keep it, because we want the film to be accessible, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the film's message is kind of against that sort of territoriality in a way, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, one of the things the creatures are incredibly territorial in a kind of unthinking, animalistic, like, negative way. And one of the journeys I think Moses goes on and the gang goes on are to realise how kind of stupid that is in some ways.
Mm.
So we were sort of trying to keep it non-partisan with the bandanas, wouldn't you say?
You didn't want to make a purple or a red something that stood out. Do you know what I mean? And the characters they don't wear it for long. So
yeah,
just trying to get a feel.
A man isn't necessarily a bandana anyway.
Yeah,
it's a napkin, isn't it?
It's all of someone's head
running
or something.
I'm just running. I've got my mum's
headscarf
that she puts on when she comes out of the bath or something. I've just wore it.
That's
to cover
right.
My
we
face.
Talked about that, didn't we? It's something he's just grabbed because he knows what they're gonna do.
I think the costumes are a good mix between hood and sci-fi as well, because like you can see that they kind of start turning into kind of like superhero-y kind of costume sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like big, so the hood really done tight.
The colours
and the kind of shininess of my jacket in it and. And Moses' hat, kind of like his kind of superhero helmet and stuff, so... Yeah.
I always thought of the characters a bit like action figures.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they've all got their own look. They've all got their own little vehicle. Yeah. They've all got their particular little weapon they use to defend themselves. I always fantasised there might be a line of Attack the Block action figures with little plastic accessories.
That's a mangle.
I think one of the things that we were choosing, picking the costume, that'd was Moses' jacket. And which we did, we found it really hard to get. We went like through three or four jackets
to get the right kind of feel for it.
Wanted it to be like cinematic at the same time.
And what was it you liked about the one that we eventually chose?
It just looks as if he's like a soldier. Like
it's a little bit Che Guevara, isn't it? Like a freedom fighter.
Yeah, it has that kind of oomph to it.
Yeah, Citizen Smith.
Cool. Yeah.
You won't remember who Citizen Smith is, but he was a freedom fighter of a kind.
This is a different story.
So let's talk about the estate here. So the estate you're looking at in these wide shots does not exist, right? And that was one of my ambitions, really. I wanted people to go, oh, what was the estate? Where is that block? Even though it's basically a composite of Islington, somewhere near the Olympic site and the Haygate in Elephant and Castle.
Yeah, it is a combination.
It's really good,
Alex, tell us how we did that then. Tell us where the different bits are.
The bit where we're coming out on the bikes near the beginning and we take a right, well, it was our left, but it was our right. We all come out on bikes and ride towards the
playground. The main entrance and exit to the
that
block.
That bit was in Islington. Then the actual door to the block, that was in Bow near the
that's
Olympic
right.
Stadium.
So the place where it says Wyndham House and where Pest runs in and gets his leg bitten.
And then
and the main block itself was there as well, wasn't it? The actual tower block.
And then the rest of all the walkways and all stuff like that's all part of the Haygate Estate.
And the Haygate was a pretty amazing place to film, don't you think?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It was very nearly empty, wasn't it?
Big maze as well. Massive.
Yeah, so much fun on that stage, man.
And do any of you know the Haygate from before we made the film?
Yeah, I knew it. Have you had friends who lived there and used to hang out there before we filmed? But now it's just cut off.
So that must have been quite cool for you, Simon, as somebody who knew that area. And John, you live not too far away.
Yeah, not too far away from
To now to then be back there filming.
It's like because you've known it from when there were shops that was open there. From where, like, before my mum probably even had me, she was going there with my older brother.
Yeah.
There's like a bakery there, summer
laundry,
barbecues,
everything.
So what do you think about these places, these blocks and the architecture? Because, like, I grew up not in a block, but I used to be slightly envious of people who lived there just because the architecture was a bit like a spaceship. And they seem like the most amazing places to have games when you're a kid. Is that true?
Yeah, it is. When I was little, we used to love playing, like, they'll get these big blocks, like, normally, like, Guinness. It was called, like, Guinness block, like a block.
That was the name of the building.
You would just go up in it, and it's like, when you open a lift, you don't know what floor you're going to get caught on. So I used to just stay in the lift anyway.
Right.
Because no one really goes in there, because they know it's, like, a dead end.
But what's the reality? I mean, are they... Because in some films, in a lot of films, tower blocks and estates are presented as these sort of symbols of, you know, urban decay kind of thing, aren't they? But we tried to do something different with this film, really, and make the block into a sort of sci-fi playground kind of thing. What do you think the reality is? Is it a combination of both?
Yeah, like when you're young as well, like, and playing games like runouts or something with your friends, like, you used to run around the whole estate, like, and you used to know the estate as well, like, the back of your hand.
Yeah.
So you knew where everything was, used to hide in places. But, like, sometimes you could, like, play it on the actual whole estate, and, like, you can play it for hours, literally hours, hours on days, like,
some people
holidays.
Never get caught, like.
Yeah, you'll never get caught. She's running around the whole place. Oh, it was really good.
What's run out? Is run out a particular game?
Yeah, if you didn't play it, then you missed out.
How do you play run out?
There's two teams.
Hang on, one at a time, Leon.
There's two teams, and, like, one team goes to hide, and then they run off, like, basically go hide, and the other team, like, will stay back for a while, and then you have to find them.
So it's like hide and seek with big numbers.
Yeah, basically.
Bikes and stuff.
Yeah, you used to play anything you want, like public transport, get on a bus to get away.
I think the way I used to play it was if there's a big group of us, one person will start as the catcher, and everyone's running, and then when they catch each person, they have to join the team. Yeah, basically like family hand.
So listen, let's get back to the film, and this is one of our dialogue scenes coming up. And John Boyega, let's talk about this scene that. This speech that Moses has here. This is kind of Moses' big speech. He's not a character that talks a lot. He kind of doesn't say much, but when he does say stuff, everybody kind of pays attention. But this is really, I think, the only part of the film where a character mentions colour without it being just a joke. And this, for me, came from one or two kids I'd met when I did research that... Because when I did the research, I would ask people whether they believed in aliens. And most of the kids said no, but one or two of them actually believed, not in aliens, but in conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
And in the idea that the government and the state were actually conspiring against, you know, black kids, specifically some of them thought it was specifically against working class kids who lived on estates. They actually thought that there was a conspiracy against them to keep them out of work and to hold them down. And that's what I was trying to get at here with Moses, because I was looking for places in the film where I could find little bits of sci-fi in a scenario that wasn't sci-fi. And that was one of the places where people actually believed in quite far-fetched things. What was that? I mean, we talked about that before we shot this, right, John?
Yeah, we did.
How did that sit with you, that speech of Moses?
I think it's it's just how he sees it, how he sees life, from the experiences he's been through. It's just our friends. From the experiences he's been through, it's just how he kind of views everything from what's happened to him. So I kind of, it was cool. It was written well. Do you know what I mean? The speech. We but tweaked it a little bit just to kind of stay true to Moses' view of things, and kind of like to have that contrast from the speech at the end of him taking responsibility. And you can kind of like a physical representation of how he changes throughout the film.
Yeah. It was always important to me because I wanted to balance the bad thing Moses does at the beginning with a sense of how he's got to that place in his head where he feels that's an okay thing to do.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
where he really feels the world is against him, right? Mm-hmm. And the world isn't doing him any favours, so he doesn't feel he should do the world any favours back, really.
It's a baby mentality. At the end of the day, he needs to kind of step up and fix himself up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Start with himself.
Start with himself first before you start talking about other people.
So this was quite a complicated scene to shoot, isn't it? I think it's one of the sequences we spent the most time filming because there's so many different elements. With the girls killing the creature in their bedroom, Moses getting his sword stuck in the wall, everybody else being too frightened to back him. And was that an issue there in terms of your characters not going to back Moses and in terms of Moses not going to back Dennis?
That was a big issue for me. That was a big issue. I think what Dennis done in terms of coming for Moses with the police van and doing that, I think that sat with Moses. That kind of shows that night proved who was his boys. Do you know what I mean? And the fact that when we first shoot it, I was at the back of the sofa, just like, all like squirming and just not doing anything. And really and truly, I just wanted to get in there and just like knock a couple of heads out. So I think we did reshoots where we had a shot where he gets thrown back by all the glass. He tries to get out, but a second alien just comes through, so he couldn't, like, physically couldn't go for him.
So we strengthened the idea that Moses was terrified by the fact that there are two aliens.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
so freaked out by what's happening in front of his eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
That he loses the moment of courage to go and help. But that's important to me, that you show that Moses, despite having this kind of outward appearance of being
the child,
yeah, that the inside he's actually frightened and scared and vulnerable, and because this is the point in the movie now really where his actions come back to haunt him, kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And he realizes that if he hadn't made the choices he made at the beginning of the film, he wouldn't have lost his friends.
Mm. And Dennis hurt him the most, man. Dennis is what made him kind of like want to be brave and want to fight him, kind of thing.
What, seeing Dennis die
and not being able to help Dennis? Yeah.
Especially when Dennis kind of saved him earlier.
Yeah, Dennis saved him earlier, yeah.
Risked his life to go into that smoke where there was two aliens.
Yeah, yeah.
Open the van and try to get him out of there.
I think a lot of it is kind of like an outward thing, like kind of like showing off. Like, when Dennis comes through, he goes, "Took your time, man." What Moses really meant was, "Thank God you came. Nice to see you, man. I thought I was dead."
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, yeah.
And now we're back in the bin with Biggs. Now, Simon, tell us about shooting these scenes. Was it weird to be sat in that bin all on your own?
It was weird in the sense of not being on my own, but the sense of, like, trying to act in, like, a cramped environment. Like,
yeah.
I'm going in a small hole that is a bin. And I have to, like, basically act lots of different emotions while I'm in a closed environment.
And we work hard to get your levels of, like, distress and freaked outness up high, didn't we?
Yeah, before we shot nearly every scene of it, I was working on it.
And you spent a lot of time in that bin having people smashing the outside of that bin with a huge rubber hammer.
But there was everything. I think there was there was actually a bit where a big plank of wood or something went actual under the bin.
Like a lever jerk it up and down.
Or something. It's just jerking the bin actually up and down a lot.
And this scene is so cool. Ooh.
Yeah.
So here's Jermaine Hunter now. He's survived his little fight with the creatures in the lift. And this is when Brewis starts to realise the full extent of the carnage in the block.
Go on, Alex. I was just going to say, one thing I love about Jermaine is that Offset, you know, he's so, like, just normal, like, we'll just start laughing, but then on screen he seems so twisted.
Yeah.
And, like, you know what
he
I mean?
He seems like someone you wouldn't want to talk to and
exactly.
have a combo with.
But then, like, Offset, he's just hilarious, man. He's just such a nice guy.
Why do you think he comes back to this block when he knows that there are these weird creatures in it?
Pride. With Brewis?
No, hi-hats.
He wants
pride.
Oh, it's his block.
Pride.
Pride.
Yep. Definitely.
He can't be letting these little youngers thinking that they like ran him out of his own area and talking to him about all these aliens.
So it's for his reputation.
Yeah, he needs to think that I'm the big man and keep up his whole image of I'm the boss of this block.
Because sometimes you read about things that happen in the real world that are so outrageous, you know, people attacking each other in broad daylight or in the street or walking into a shop, and you think, man, how... why would somebody do that? But it's the same kind of reason, isn't it? It's to show that you are completely fearless.
It's all part of, it's all in the mind.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to show weakness.
Because he thinks
even,
he'll
like,
get overrun.
If you even notice, like, even when the alien was coming towards him and he was still walking towards it to the point where it was like, oh, okay, now I got to run. Mm. But he was still fighting that urge to kind of stay...
So he's really, he's kind of failed to learn the thing that Moses is now realising.
Yeah.
So he goes on the journey that Moses would have gone on if Moses hadn't...
He's almost what Moses would become.
I think he got trapped in it. Like, he got really trapped there, whereas Moses was, he was going to get trapped, but this kind of saved him in a way.
And let's talk about Probs and Mayhem, who we just saw, Sammy Williams and Michael Ajayo. What were they like to work with, Probs and Mayhem? Simon, you had a scene with them in the bin. I don't. Does anyone else? Yeah, you all had a little scene with them at the very beginning of the film and in the corridor.
You wouldn't think of that when you're outside and that, you wouldn't think someone of like their age would be intelligent, but where I've actually where I've actually chilled with them in the bin for more than half an hour, they know a lot. Like, I think, rah, like, they know what they're doing.
I mean, Sammy, they're both very talented actors. Sammy, I think, had done a little more screen work than Michael.
Yeah.
But they were both had amazing like charisma and energy, don't you think? They were fun to be around, right?
Yeah. You can see when we were off camera, like they were kind of mature in a way. Like you could talk to them on levels as well. Yeah. Like,
except for the random moments.
Hey, John.
What?
Shut up.
Who was that?
Michael.
Who plays
And everyone was off stage when he was coming out with "You got boy."
Yeah, I love that, man.
So the smoky corridor scene.
So scary, man.
We walked into that. Do you remember, John? And we couldn't see a thing.
So let's talk about what we had to do for this. So we had this whole corridor set, and they basically built a loop, a huge loop. So they built a huge plastic tunnel that linked one end of the corridor with another, so that we could fill the corridor with smoke. And then when we finished a take, they actually pumped the air in the corridor like a bicycle pump, so that the smoke moved round to the opposite side of the circle, kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? Then they'd hold it in the plastic bag until we were ready to shoot, and then they'd pump it back into the corridor. But it was genuinely impossible to see. It was very hard for the camera operator to see whether the shot was in focus or not, and we had to do this really quickly. And it was really frustrating for me because it was, you know, I was planning for it to be a really elaborate, detailed sequence, and we had something like half a day or two-thirds of a day to do your whole death, didn't we?
What was it
like for you, Leon?
As you said, the smoke corridor, like, literally, as you can see it, you actually can't see, like, more than that. Like, you can just about see your hand in front of your face. Like, it's really, you can't see, as you see Jerome, like, ran into the wall because you couldn't see, basically. But filming that was nuts. Like, it's just weird filming when you film something and you know you're gonna die. Like, it's very strange.
Really?
Yeah, it is.
It's not cool.
why is that? So
I don't know. You just get that feeling of like, oh, I'm going to die now. Like, and that's the end. It just feels kind of strange.
Because it feels like the end of your work on the film? Or because you care about your character?
Yeah,
or because it makes you think about your actual life and death? No,
not that far. Not that far. Yeah, you see that? He grabbed my head. But it's weird. Like your character's coming to an end, and it just feels like, oh man,
no more.
I wish he didn't get into this situation, as he even says himself, and that. But
yeah,
it's weird, man. But it was a good scene. I loved it though. I was getting dragged back by some two big guys. Pulled me back on the mat, and then I slid back. Yeah, and the blood come out.
This bit, I wanted to go in. I wanted to go in and get him.
Yeah, because that was emotional.
I wanted to go in and get him. That was like, nah, man. This is it, man. Nah, I'm sick of this.
Yeah.
But then, too big.
I didn't really deserve to die. Whereas then
no, you didn't.
Prick.
Whoa. Yeah.
I mean, a nice prick. Like, I'm joking.
So now we're coming back into Ron's, and this is the set that everybody found quite... I mean, there was a lot of smoke in this film, wasn't there?
Mm.
And that was, I think...
I think it was bad for everybody's lungs.
Yeah, I think everyone was going a bit queasy.
That made everyone feel a bit queasy after
a bit queasy.
While.
Especially not
Drago. Nick made me laugh at this bit, but he's just like, sorry.
No, he just goes as well.
Yeah.
You know what? I really like all the smoke in the film, and it's something that me and Tom Townend, who shot the film, talked about a lot before we filmed it, because we remember it from the 80s and 70s when we were kids. And if you watch movies like Alien and Aliens,
smoke.
Everyone's puffing like crazy. They're having these big, you know, debates in the headquarters about whether to go back to the planet to try and capture the aliens, and Sigourney's puffing away on a fag. And in old cop movies, everyone's puffing on fags. And every room is filled with this smoke, and so it does amazing things to the light. So, and in modern films, they're shot digitally, and smoking is against the law now. So everything looks really clean and polished. Does that make any sense? I kind of miss the old school kind of atmosphere of it.
Man.
That's got a hurt.
Sorry, Joe, but...
It's weird, isn't it? Lots of people find that quite full on, but I just think it's just pure fun.
I love it.
Wish I never chased after that thing. Wish we never met you.
But this is a movie with a lot of naughty weed smoking, a lot of swearing, and a lot of violence, and some jumps. So let me ask you this. What did your parents, or guardians think of this script being... Because you were 16, 17 when you did this film. Well, did any of your parents or guardians raise any concerns about the what was in the script, friends?
There was one actually when I first got the script, and my mum had a little butcher's. At the start, I remember there was when we was robbing Sam, and there was they take her ring and something, and there was this little direction that I wasn't really sure what it was about. I was like, but they want more. Then I was kind of like, huh? Like,
yeah.
What do they want more? But my mum was like, okay. But it worked out all right.
she thought yeah, they were implying like, some kind
whoa,
of
whoa.
Really yeah. horrible motive.
Yeah, some
yeah.
really.
But that was it? That was the only twisted. Thing? There was no objection to anything
else? Other than that, she was like, yeah, I like it.
Because I was kind of worried that, like, because at that point, we really wanted you guys for the parts. And there was a little voice in my head worried that your parents might read the script and go, no, they're not doing it.
Well, they're no agents, are they? Do you know what I mean? They're
no.
Not.
And I guess you were 16, so
yeah.
can do what you want at that point.
My mum wasn't comfortable with the robbery and the fact that, my mum doesn't know the difference between Moses and my son. So she watches it, that's my boy.
Yeah.
So she was just a bit like, why are you robbing the woman? Why did you do that? I was like, whoa. It's not me, okay? But yeah, she liked it. She thought it was epic.
Now, Alex, this is a big moment for Pest that we've just moved past, his little exchange with Sam. and he's been quite flirty with Sam. What's the deal with Pesticles and Sam?
I think, you know, he probably kind of likes her, but he probably knows he's got no chance in hell, so I think he's just kind of taking the piss to see where it leads.
Trying it on for just in case.
Yeah, for shits and giggles.
Yeah. Fair enough. And now Brewis is becoming a little more one of the team here, right?
Yeah.
He's becoming the Jerome boy.
He's becoming the Jerome, right? He's taking over as the Dr. Facts.
Yeah, I quite like this bit because, you know, when Brewis and Pest connect at this point, it kind of shows that, you know, he's just kind of, as you said, been accepted sort of thing.
Luke Treadaway is a very analytical actor. I mean, is Jodie and Nick, but Luke particularly did a lot of quite deep down foraging work for his like character. Mm-hmm. Did any of you guys talk to him about that or work with him? Or did you just perform in the moment on the set?
Well, our characters.
Yeah.
I think, well, personally, I know I did a lot. I did research on my character as well. Like, because I know, obviously, growing up in Hackney, you kind of know, like, you grow up with people that are kind of in that kind of lifestyle. And I kind of, like, chilled out with a few guys for a little bit and see what kind of goes on and stuff, and we did a lot. I know me and John done a lot of character work together on our characters, especially like just me and him on the phone and stuff, talking a lot about our characters and trying to work like what the root of why they're doing everything is. So I did a lot of character work anyway.
Did anybody else do anything in particular to prepare?
I was doing a lot of character work like at home and with my brother as well. Like I was just like, I kept going through everything and like every line what I would say, I would think, why is Big saying it? Like there's a meaning. Like, so knowing by the person's lines, you could kind of know what type of person they are as well. So I was, and I kind of got like, he's kind of like, youths growing up in South London these days, they're kind of like, a word what people would use is gas. Like they're just,
what does that mean?
That it means not full of their self, but
hyped up and extra over
hyped
the top.
That someone that a phrase would be someone's gassed you. That someone's just told him he's better than what he is.
Right,
just,
and they believe that.
And they actually believe.
Oh right, so like pumping up your ego.
Yeah. But then
you believe
the hype.
It. Yeah.
So I kind of.
And that's how that's what you felt Biggs was like. John, what did you do to prepare? I mean, obviously we did. What, 3 or 4 weeks of rehearsal? So we together we got into your characters and we analysed the lines. But I'm interested to know what you did before we got to that stage.
But I think with me it was kind of trying to get the character during the rehearsal process. I mean the audition process, because my first audition was very loud, very comedic. So you try to get me down, like get all that big stuff and get it down to like character. So that meant going back to watch season 4 of The Wire.
Right.
Particularly Michael's character, and asking questions around my estate because I didn't understand how the whole drug thing works out.
Yeah.
So trying as much as possible like to get back to that, because I was working at the time, I wasn't in my area to hear what's new, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But trying to get back to that element. I kind of finding Moses in myself, that element of myself, which is the silence and which is kind of taking things in. Trying to make that element of myself control this whole other person.
Yeah. Pesticles.
I don't really want to go into what I did to prepare.
Okay, fair enough. Leon Jones III.
I was like looking at like, I watched like, a lot of movies actually, because like, in a lot of movies you see these like individuals and like the brain box. I even watched a couple like spy movies and that to see how people like would work stuff out as well, and like just their thinking. Like,
yeah.
Because Jerome does a lot of thinking as well, and he likes to work stuff out as well. So,
who would you say your favourite actors are? Your heroes are? Your idols are on screen? Friends? Who would you say yours are?
Oh, on British or just in general?
Anywhere.
I've got loads. I'm just gonna say 3. Shia LaBeouf.
Oh man.
Shia LaBeouf. Will Smith.
Oh my days.
And also Sean Bean.
Ah. Mm. Now, what work that Sean Bean's done?
That do you Lord like? Of the Rings.
I'm a big Lord of the Rings fan.
I'm a Transformers fan as well. I'm Will Smith. He's a big guy. I like him a lot. Who else? Flip. I like Johnny Depp. I like what he does with his characters as well. Like, he does a lot of work as well. Third one, I don't know.
That's pretty good. Alex, who would you say is up there for your heroes?
If I had to pick one, it would have to be Johnny Depp, because his characters, you know, he always kind of adds this weird kind of sense of, you know,
craziness
to every character he does, and I quite like that.
What about you, John Boyega?
Denzel Washington.
Right. Now, people Shia often LaBeouf. Say that you look like a young Denzel. Do you like that?
I don't mind. It doesn't do anything bad to my career. I mean, sure, I mean, it doesn't make it any worse. But
you're a good age to be one of Denzel's kids as well, right?
Yeah, if he wants to cast me as Denzel's son in a film, I'm so down for that. Me and Leon's already written the script.
Yeah,
so.
we've written the script already.
We haven't got a title.
We got that. That's the only thing.
Can you give us the pitch? What's the pitch?
Father and son are rebels. Go around robbing banks. Yeah.
Nice. You and Denzel.
Yeah, me and Denzel.
And what, Leon, you going to direct?
As well.
I think Leon's that guy in the station going, yeah, we got F-18s or some shit. So that's it. Okay, going, no. Then me and Denzel run in slow motion, just going, pff, 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 shoot out the place.
That's going to be, I'm looking forward to that.
When's
it coming out?
It's coming out.
Work in progress.
Yeah. Okay. And Simon, who are your big idols? Who do you watch on the big screen and love?
Will Smith a lot. I like Will Smith a lot. And I've always said that he's played in Holby City. Do you know Kwame?
Say his name again.
Kwame Kwama. I worked with him.
John was telling me. He was meant to plan that. Kwame, I like the way he acts a lot. And I would say Johnny Depp as well. Because he's played lots of different characters, and he always seems to be when I'm watching him, it's always I'm inspired what he does. How did he manage to get to work that out with that character? He's
a genius.
I got one more as well, actually.
Go on.
Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
We could go on for days about it. Mm-hmm.
So listen, let's talk to Mr. John Boyega now about this hero run.
Oh, yeah, baby.
So this is right towards the end of the schedule. This is one of the last things we filmed, right? Mm-hmm. And we actually filmed it quite quickly because we were shooting on two studios simultaneously, or two or three sets. In fact, we had three sets going simultaneously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So talk to us about doing this, John.
It was amazing. Loved it. This bit was a bit scary because you made it hard. Because you wanted me to do that sofa stuff. What's that?
That's cool.
But it looks so cool now. But when I was on set, I was like, what's wrong with this boy? Why is he telling me to do this? But then it looks so cool. And I had to work out with Wesley as well. So look at my arms.
This one's coming up now. That bit there.
Boom.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was amazing to do. Terry actually gave me the idea to start off low.
Really?
Since I've just come from a jump down the stairs.
And you're hitting quite an amazing stance there.
Yeah.
Mid-stride.
Mm-hmm.
Tensing up.
Tensing
up. Leon told me to tense my arms.
Yeah, look at them.
Yeah, That was the hardest bit to film.
Throwing carcass.
Yeah, we did reshoots with that bit.
It was heavy, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Now we should talk about reshoots, because we shot for an extra 3 or 4 days on Attack the Block. And sometimes people in the real world think that you do that when things kind of have gone wrong. But actually it's something most movies do. I'd say 99% of movies do that, because there's so little time that what you have to do is get your wide shots first. Do you know what I mean? Am I explaining this properly? So you get the widest shots first, so that if you run out of time and you need to get a close-up, you can usually restage that close-up without having to build the whole set.
Yeah.
So the logical way to shoot a film is wider shots first, then get tighter and tighter.
Mm.
So on lots of films, you end up with a little basket of close-ups that you still need, because you haven't had time to do them. So you'll go back and get a few more days and get little close-ups and inserts and stuff. And that's what we were doing here with the reshoots. And then sometimes you take the opportunity to improve something.
Yeah, this was reshoots.
Or make a plot point stronger.
On one of the reshoots.
You wanted a reshoot?
No, on the reshoots, I'd literally just come back from Miami. And
yeah,
like, there was one. Like you can't even like. I mean, normally just watching it, you can't really tell
unless you look properly.
But like, there's one scene where I'm like, quite like normally just like light, and then it cuts to like this close up, and I'm like tanned, and it quickly goes back.
That's in Sam's flat when you say Sam's what's wrong flat. With the area.
And the only person that a little really, bit of really suntan was like my mum. She was like,
you look kind of darker there.
Now, do you think over the course of the shoot, you guys became more confident? Can you see your performances getting better?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we got more of a sense of character kind of as it went on. Mm-hmm. So, and that, like, I don't know, different kind of little think, relationships.
Like the friendship
and stuff.
Level as well, like the bonds between us.
And did you start feeling sad towards the end of the shoot? Did you start having a feeling of that it was going to be over soon?
Yeah, I didn't want it to end.
I would miss like the boys as
yeah,
well.
Man.
I think I started feeling it since when like Friends was offset for a bit. I'd be like, oh, where's Friends? Where's Leon? Like there.
And no, what did man. You? What things did you enjoy most about just the day to day life of being on a film set? Because there are downsides. You've got to get up incredibly early, you don't get much sleep, your time's not your own really, but there are plus sides as well. What are the plus sides? Craft. Now what's craft, Alex?
It's it was kind of like it's kind catering. Of like a catering service, but they dealt with mostly like sandwiches, snacks, drinks.
So you like the fact that there was sort of a tuck shop the whole time
that you
with
could
kind of
like if especially the greatest thing about it is like I'd come in at say 6 in the morning. And I'd just say to him, right, espresso, drink it, another one, drink it, another one, drink it, and then I'd be alright. So it's like,
yeah, just demanding espressos.
Yeah,
just
like panini.
Espresso,
panini,
purely
human.
Is the one.
I invented a jelly and peanut butter panini, which I'm proud of.
Peanut butter and jelly.
Yep.
And let's talk about this the very end of the movie that's coming up now. So we have Sam, kind of suggesting that she's going to tell the police the truth. And that even though Moses will probably be held accountable for the mugging, there may be some mitigating circumstances. And then this little piece we shot between Pest and Moses in the police van, we shot a lot of different takes of this, didn't we, to try and get the right
smile for
Moses.
Yeah.
What's that smile saying to you, John? What do you think it's saying about the character?
I think, number one, what was hard about getting that smile was I had to think about everything that I had been through, like Moses' character's been through throughout the whole night. And it was hard to get that smile in because I was like, oh, why is he smiling for when his boys are dead? And but it's actually kind of like bringing out the grace and the rise to redemption in the whole thing. Kind of like...
Yeah,
like it's over now.
Like it's over now,
yeah,
do you know what I mean?
We finally did it, you know?
Yeah.
And for me, it's the first moment when Moses smiles in an unaffected, completely sincere way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's the first time you probably see... the real Moses, like the child that he was before he started turning into this guy that had to defend himself and be the big man.
Yeah.
Because he's feeling all that love and support and from his community.
Yeah. Difficult.
And that's it. The film is finished.
Oh, man.
Oh, what a shame.
Are you happy, guys, with these little moments that we chose of you at the end here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The idea here was to show everybody, you know, just to underline, you know, well, first of all, to make it clear what your names are and who you are so that we give you as good a launch as possible.
Yeah.
And the other idea was to show people that it's all pretend. That even though it might have been scary and thought-provoking and intense and dark, it's actually just...
A film.
A film.
Yeah.
And a bit of fun, and you're not really those kids, and this doesn't exist. And So what do you think Attack the Block means? What do you think? Do you think it has a message as a film? Do you think there's something other than a kind of crazy alien romp there? Do you think there's... Would you like people to take something away from the film kind of thing? Who wants to answer that?
Yeah.
France.
I think in the media a lot... teenagers from council estates are portrayed like really bad and robbing people and stabbing people and just portrayed as monsters, really.
Yeah.
And this film kind of shows that when the real monsters come down and they're actually faced with like a real threat and everyone's kind of dependent on them, that they really step up to the challenge and that you realise, oh, they're not so evil and bad, they're just normal and they can do good as well.
Yeah.
Well said.
I think it kind of shows that it's not that, even if they are in a cancerous state, like in the so-called hood, they still have feelings too, like everyone cries, everyone feels it, like we're all family. And it's like that normally people would think for the snitch as Sam, that we became friends with her, but it didn't take, although it was long, we still became friends with her. Mm. That it just goes to show that we're not like mean, like, shut up, go away, I'll stab you.
Yeah, that there are different possibilities within any human being. Like, there's the potential for good and bad, for friendship, or, you know, to keep someone at a distance. What do you think, John?
I think with all these, everyone's always going to mention stereotypes. I think a stereotype is just an aspect of what is real. Do you know what I mean? And this film is just showing another aspect about people who make the right decisions. And which is what the media fails to, you know, draw people's attention to. The kids that actually turn around and say, no, I don't want this life, and kind of takes responsibility of their actions and like carries on with life. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I think this is just a visual representation of that with aliens.
So that's it, the film's over. Say goodbye to everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening.
Arrivederci, homie.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Bye.
Did you get everyone fighting for the last word?
No, man.
Yeah, so let's leave it as that.
Let's leave it.
Finish.
Bye.
Let's sign off with a G's.
G's!